Money Radio. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to welcome Steve Lohr. He is a writer, a reporter. He's covered technology, business, and economics for the New York Times for more than 20 years and writes the Times Bits blog. In 2013, he was part of the team awarded the Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting. And he has been a foreign correspondent, has served as an editor, and written for numerous national publications. He is also the author of Go To, the story of the math majors, bridge players, engineers, chess wizards, maverick scientists, and iconoclast, the programmers who created the software revolution. And that's a title and a half.
It is.
And he is the author of a new book, Dataism. Data-ISM, Dataism, the revolution transforming decision-making, consumer behavior, and almost everything else, by Steve Lohr, and that's spelled L-O-H-R. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, Sinclair. I appreciate it.
First of all, we're talking about big data, and so let's define that. What is big data, and then the follow-up to it as well, just how big is it?
Yeah, I define it broadly as essentially three things of ascending order of importance to ordinary people. One is all the new data sources that we know about, the web pages, smartphone trails, sensor data, genetic data, and so forth. The second level is also technical, and that's the software, mainly from the tools of artificial intelligence used to sort of make sense and see patterns in this data. But the really important thing is that these tools allow you to see, you know, potentially at least, to see things in a way you couldn't before. In the same way that the microscope allowed people to see the mysteries of life and biology down to the cellular level, and the telescope allowed people to see the stars, the galaxies, and perhaps man's place in the universe differently than they had before. This technology allows you to sort of potentially, again, to see, sense, and act in ways you hadn't before. And that opens up the third big category, which is a change in the center of gravity of decision-making. And in theory, at least, it means you can more decisions can be made based on data and analysis and less on experience and intuition. Now, of course, there's a real caveat there. I mean, experience and intuition at its best is really the human synthesis of vast amounts of data that you can't put a crisp number on. Those are the broad implications, the broad definition at least. The implications are, again, potentially to be able to smarten up the world.
And just how big is big data?
Here, technical definitions are different. And in some ways, I mean, to be fair about this, the greatest misnomer in all of this, in the big data, is the big, because the overall number of bits in zettabytes, as they're called, is really inflated in part because we have more and more video, and video is so bit hungry. And the problem there, of course, is that that's all fine, and it adds to this data stream and so forth, but it's not. It's often not useful in the same way that there's a lot of water in the ocean, too. You can't drink it.
Okay. Next step, then, what is dataism?
Again, you mentioned the first title, the title of the other book, you know, years and years ago, This History of Programming.
You shortened it down. That's good.
One thing I've learned in writing books, in a way, you know, you have the publisher has a lot to say about the title and the time. You know, it determines the title and the timing. Beyond that, it's up to you. But this one is far better, I think. And just to explain, a year after I signed up for this project in 2012, one of my colleagues, David Brooks, wrote a column for the New York Times, and its beginning sentence was, if I had to describe a rising philosophy of the day, I would say it is dataism. And again, it gets back to that, you know, decision-making element, the broader element that I talked about. My book editor liked it and seemed apt to me, so we took it. And it's not pre-surrealist paint art, dataism, which people have also made fun of. So.
Well, let's look at that decision-making process. You talked about patterns of behavior that can be used to help make predictions. That's an interesting concept, and certainly I think most of us can see it as it applies to, say, the supply chain. We sell a ream of paper we know that we need to reorder some paper. And then that goes back to the transportation company. It goes back to the manufacturing company. It goes back to the mills. It goes back to the lumber and literally the loggers out in the forest. We kind of get that idea of how that supply chain works, and we've seen some examples of it. But really what you're also talking about is making predictions beyond just the supply chain.
Right, and there are a number of kind of examples that are areas of activity where this is used. One I kind of like that's in the book is an adult intensive care unit in Emory Medical Center in Atlanta, and I hadn't been in one before, frankly, and a standard 20-bed adult intensive care unit generates an estimated 160,000 data points a second. And if you go into one, they're just filled with, you know, it's an arsenal of medical computing, as many as 20 devices in each room, monitoring everything about the person, including and then there's the respirators. There's all the equipment that's monitored as well. And there's this constant cacophony of beeps, you know, false alerts, to be honest. And so what you need is something to sort of sift through that. No human can really, you know, make sense of that. The human is being overwhelmed by the amount of data or information and needs help. And so what has been developed is working on there is the equivalent of a GPS early warning system for airplanes, which monitors the movement of the plane, and the air traffic controller can see a graphic that shows when the plane is veering off trajectory, as if it were. And the guy who is the head of this intensive care effort in Atlanta is also a professional pilot, among other things, as well as being a trauma surgeon and so forth. And that's the analogy he uses. What we want is that sort of early warning signal when a patient is veering off trajectory from a health standpoint. And that's, you know, that's not crystal ball gazing into the future. That's a heads up of maybe an hour, 2 hours before the person is in great trauma. And that's there are a number of examples of those kinds of things where, again, the sort of sense, see, and act, almost in the military sense, the ability to do that is enhanced because of this technology.
So data-intensive areas, yeah, I can see how this makes a lot of sense, but are there still areas where the human has an advantage over the machine?
Totally. I mean, one of the things that is... I mean, in theory, you know, big decisions should be made better with better information, right, and more knowledge. Okay, we kind of agree with that. Mm-hmm. But it's not clear to me that that we've seen this stuff do, again, the, you know, what I mentioned is experience and intuition kind of thing. And, again, a kind of classic example I use is it's 2010, and we're in the boardroom of the New York Times. The Apple's iPad has been announced, but it's not yet on sale. Steve Jobs is showing it off to a dozen people from different departments in the Times. And somebody asked him, you know, how much market research went into it. Now, for those of us who know Jobs, kind of knew what the answer was going to be, but it's still fun to hear it. And he said, none. It's not the consumer's job to know what they want. And those are the kind of big decisions, design, systems thinking, that humans are still superior at. And Jobs, in different venues, would always describe it as what he regarded as taste. And that is, you know, you take in the best that your culture has to offer. And you drink it in, reading, listening, watching, and that will improve enhance the quality of the decisions you make and what you produce, whether you're a software designer or fashion designer. And that's that kind of thing is really, again, you can't put a crisp number on it, but getting the big stuff right is where human pattern recognition, I think, comes in a way that we have not yet seen it with this technology.
Tell us also a little bit about a couple of stories that are included in the book, Dataism. First of all, the story of, here's a perfect example of where data is used, Wall Street. A Wall Street quant, Jeffrey Hammerbacher.
Yeah.
And then compare that to a name in technology that we've all heard, and one that many people look at and say, well, that's a fading company, IBM.
Yeah, the way I tried to do this book, to make it a story, is largely around, much of it was around one young man, and it's this Jeff Hammerbacher, and one old company, and the old company was IBM. And Hammerbacher is an example of what we now call a data scientist. And he was an auto worker's son from Fort Wayne, Indiana, who then went to Harvard, went to Wall Street briefly, then started the data team at Facebook, decided that targeting ads and social networks weren't his life work, though he did very well there. And then started a software startup making these data tools called Cloudera. But now he's at Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York, and he thinks that's the best use of his skills. So I follow him through, and to get to you, to answer your Wall Street point, Sinclair, he, coming out of Harvard, this was, 2005, is before the crash, right? And as he said, much of his career has been, following the smartest people, going after the best problems. And a lot of people, the math quants coming out, and he was an applied math major at Harvard, went to Wall Street. And he, it's fascinating work, model building, but he thought it was a really terrible use of quantitative skills. Because really what they did is just try to make these math, mortgage finance models more complex and closed and proprietary, as opposed to the web approach, which is much more open and sharing. And so he was at Bear Stearns for less than a year, and then went to Facebook. Now the old company is IBM, and I follow them in part because they are their data management goes back to its heritage technology, the Hollerith punch cards, which were used in the 1890 census when to tabulate the census efficiently for the first time, really, when the population had surged to 63 million, which was, the big data of its day. And in using IBM, I'm mainly following applied research projects that it did. I mean, this one in Emory, the Emory Hospital is one. There's one, there's a classic supply chain one with McKesson, the big pharmaceutical distributor. There's a precision agriculture example in the Central Valley of California. And so that's, I did write about the dilemma that IBM faces, but it was mainly to get the kind of, looking at this technology going beyond the internet world into the mainstream of the economy and where it shines and where it stumbles.
Well, it brings up many interesting points, though. Are we really making the best use of big data? You talk about Hammerbacher and the idea that he's putting together these models for Wall Street. Mm. Then he goes to Facebook and he's trying to get people to click on advertisements. I mean, a brilliant mind doing that.
Yeah,
what's
and his
the
famous
point?
Line is, best minds of our generation are trying to get people to click on ads. That sucks.
Yeah.
And which is why he left. I mean, after essentially 3 years in a tidy sum, he's just before it went public, but still, he can cash in. There's two sides to that. That's absolutely true, and we move into that's why somebody like him is now in medical research and looking for therapies for and going through genetic and all other kinds of data for things like heart disease, cancer, and diabetes.
And then that brings up a very interesting idea. There's big data available. Certainly there's a lot of good things that can be done with it.
Mm.
Who makes the decision to do what with it? And we'll dig into that and some other questions about big data and dataism. Dataism, that's the title of the new book by Steve Lohr, Dataism, The Revolution Transforming Decision-Making, Consumer Behavior, and Almost Everything Else. Dataism, more in just a moment. Money Radio, thank you for joining us. We're talking with Steve Lohr, the author of Dataism, Data-ism, the Revolution Transforming Decision-Making, Consumer Behavior, and Almost Everything Else. Steve, when it gets down to the idea of what is to be done with all of this data, certainly there are some great applications for it. It makes a lot of sense. You can help people with medical issues. You can improve the supply chain. You even gave the example of how you can more efficiently grow grapes in Northern California. All good stuff, but there's the dark side of data as well, as it applies to the idea that everybody's being tracked essentially all the time. So there's a good side, and then there is a decidedly dark side to big data. Who makes the decisions?
You know, you raise good points, Sinclair. And it's, in a sense, I think we've been this way before with almost every technology. I mean, going back to fire, you can cook your food with it or burn down your hut with it. You can automobiles pollute the air and people die in car accidents, but they are vehicles of individual freedom and the creation of regional and national markets and so forth. On the data side, again, a recent historical analogy would be in the 1960s, there was a great concern about privacy when we first had the mainframe computers and were coming into use, and both the government, IRS, and credit bureaus were amassing large collections of data on individuals. And some of the same concerns we have about privacy now were heard then, and we passed a law, including the Fair Credit Reporting Act, about what you could do with this data in certain areas, and a Basic Privacy Act a few years later. And, you know, we found in all these things, there's no solution, but there's an accommodation. And I think on the privacy side, I think we have a healthy marketplace of competing interests that should help us arrive at an accommodation of some kind. My concern is a little bit different. It's with the black box nature of some of this, particularly as it moves to where we are now, which is in the more important stuff. I mean, it's one thing the early uses have been in marketing, online advertising, product recommendations. I mean, as one woman in the book mentioned, it's a wonderful time for data scientists to experiment with marketing. If my algorithm is wrong, somebody sees the wrong ad. It's not a false positive for breast cancer. But increasingly, these tools are being used in things like medical diagnosis, crime prevention, and loan approval. And those are things where, you know, lasting decisions can be made about an individual that actually do matter. And we've got to be able to, as one of the people who, computer scientists and artificial intelligence experts, says, for this technology to be useful and acceptable to society, it has to be able to tell a story, why it made the decision it did, and a human being has to be able to monitor that. And we're just experimenting with that now.
Do we have to worry about the machines actually getting to the point where they are making the decisions?
Yeah, you do. I mean, so much of this at this stage is, you know, we're not there yet. And you look at, you know, the ad for the shoe or something because, you know, it just follows you around. It looks pretty dumb, right? So it isn't that. But at some point, if you can't know how the decisions are made, you're giving it up to the algorithm, and that's a concern. I mean, the fact that it is a concern is going to draw a lot of attention.
And in our final few seconds, where does big data go from here?
I mean, the ultimate expression is, I don't know if anybody's seen the movie Her with Scarlett Johansson and Joaquin Phoenix. It's, you know, this smart, personal, intelligent assistant, maybe not emotional the way she was. But that's, you know, 10 years out, 2025, which is actually where that movie is based, you know, is set, is what people who actually know this technology believes we'll see.
There's no question big data is affecting pretty much everything. And if you want to find out what the idea is behind it, a great explanation, well-written explanation, Dataism, the Revolution Transforming Decision-Making, Consumer Behavior, and Almost Everything Else, Dataism by Steve Lohr, Lohr. And it's on bookshelves and all over the place now, right?
It is.
Check it out. Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sinclair. I appreciate it.